Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to be with you today. We have a lot to share, including an Australian National University study published in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Geriatric Society that says improving your lifestyle can lessen cognitive decline. Now, this is the second study. I did one yesterday and one today, showing you that when you go towards a healthy plant-based diet and when you exercise, those are two really big positive factors put on your side. But then I'm going to include some additional things today from this study. So we have a lot to share every day that empowers people. In fact, I was talking with someone yesterday who said that he listens every day. He's a professional because he's always learning something new. Whether he agrees or disagrees, it gives him an opportunity to start a new way of looking at things. And then I say, do your homework. Everything we say, we support with facts. So hopefully you'll do the same. Because today, I'm going to share three commentaries with you, very important ones, by very significant people in our society. One will be from Chris Hedges. And it's interesting because Chris takes on the idea that we're in a new bloodland now. With all this violence, whether it's Democrat or Republican supported on either side, it's wrong. But once you start, once someone starts beating someone, no matter who it is, then it encourages other people. And then before you know it, everything is lost in the melee. And you have a major, major cultural conflict. So we're going to hear from Chris, but then we're going to hear from John Whitehead about losing our freedoms, which is certainly the case. But I also have a commentary today. Mine is a part two of what I started yesterday. It is called a requiem for the New America, meaning the people throughout history who have taken their place and being a part of the multiculturalism of our society, the pioneers, the people who have contributed to what our society provides us today, there's a radical shift. A lot of people are concerned and confused. They don't like the violence. They don't mind the protests. We fully support protests. My goodness, tens of thousands of you have joined my protests over the years. And I'll talk a little bit about that, about what is the purpose of a protest and what do you hope will come from it. And have you succeeded? Sometimes we don't succeed. We write articles and documentaries and books. I was just watching a documentary a few moments ago, and right in the middle of the documentary, challenging Anthony Fauci, there I am with Professor Kerry Mullis out in California interviewing this Nobel Prize winner who discovered the PCR. And that's the test that's being used now to determine if you have COVID, and it's a false test. It won't do that. And he says that, but in any case, it was all about why believe Robert Gallo and Anthony Fauci. Fauci promised in a press conference, and the documentary shows this, you know, now that we've discovered the virus that causes AIDS, HIV, we will have, a vaccine real soon. Well, 37 years and almost $600 billion later, no, they haven't. So, you know, mind you, this guy has a bad history to him. But the press, because he's good for their cause, they're sanitizing his background. We won't. In any case, we're going to have a lot to share with you today. I don't know if we'll have time to open our calls at the end. I do want to go to some video clips that I think are extremely important, because what we've been discussing about there are safe, effective drugs to both prevent the COVID-19 virus, and in people who are in the front lines, like doctors and nurses in hospitals and people who are attending in nursing homes, but also for those who have comorbidities, meaning you're far greater at risk of being infected and dying if you have about six different comorbidities. But for the rest of the population, you have little risk, not of contracting it, but of getting sick or very sick or dying. And we're not being told the truth, because if we were, then this wouldn't be a pandemic. Flat out, the figures have been wrong. And now we have 27 separate studies to show you they've been wrong all along, and the media won't touch these studies or interview their authors. We will. We have three of those. I don't know how many we'll get to today, but we have a lot going on. What you do with the information is your choice. I believe in freedom of choice. I'm merely here as the person that tries to get you the best, most objective data, scientifically validated, and then you make your choices from there. Let's begin. Results from a new study suggest that lifestyle changes can help improve cognition, especially in older adults, and especially those suffering from cognitive decline. I have three friends right now. Now, I've always had much older friends than myself. Sarah Dona, I was 23 when I started working for her as a ghostwriter on very famous people's manuscripts. She had the Writers Literary Agency. Had a little tiny cubicle, tiny half of the desk, and wasn't even enough room I could squeeze to get in. And she would just kept stacking more and more manuscripts. And then she would sit there and eat cupcakes and go to sleep. She had diabetes, but boy, was she smart. Wow. I felt so humbled being in the presence of someone who had such knowledge. She was 80. Paul Swan, the great Renaissance artist, probably the last great Renaissance artist in American history. I remember he had been at the Carnegie Studios in Carnegie Hall for like almost 50 years. Then he was at the Van Dyck, and his pianist, and he was still performing at 80. His pianist, Richard, invited me to see if I could help him with his health. And the first night it was raining, and he was sitting under this glass roof. And as the rain was hitting the roof, there was one light, and he was painting, just a master. And he looks at me and said, "What are you looking at?" I said, "I'm just looking at you doing your work." He just smiled. Got him to live another 6 or 7 years. Dr. Emanuel Ravisi was 102 and could have lived. I said, "I can get you more time." He said, No, I've done everything I want to do. I'm ready." He was not ready when he was 78. I got him out of intensive care and saved his life that night. But I've always had these older people in my life as in relationships. Four of my older friends all have cognitive decline, and none of them are aware of it. That's one of the problems when you're in cognitive decline. You're forgetting things. You walk into a room and suddenly, why am I in here? You've read something and then you can't remember what you read or where you put something. We all need our cognition. We need the full faculty of our brain. The science is present to help us regain it if we've lost it, improve it if it's diminished, and prevent it if we're still young enough. So this study looked at people 65 and older who were experiencing cognitive decline, and it was a randomized controlled trial for 8 weeks. 8 weeks, not long. And the control group received regular information on dementia and lifestyle risk factors. And participants were instructed to implement this information into their own lifestyles. And one group did, the other group continued with their lifestyles, but with more information. There was a huge difference when people made changes. Huge. So for those of you who feel that, well, you're just too old to change, one was last night. One of my longest, closest friends, brother, has a very, very life-ending serious condition. And he called me at 10 o'clock. And the first thing I asked him was, "What do you want as the outcome?" And this is what this person said. "I'd like just to make it to the surgery." I said, "That's it? That's it." His diet was an abomination. And this is a very successful person, highly respected in his field. And so I asked him, I started using examples from his field. What if someone gave you this problem and you gave a solution and they didn't want it? He said, "Well, I understand what you're saying, but you know the saying, you can't teach old dogs new tricks." And I said, "That's not true. I can show you some very old dogs including 95, 94-year-olds, who did change with remarkable life events because of that, positive life events. He said, well, I'm one of those old dogs. It's not going to change. And he is probably representing 95% of people. They would rather die with their comforts in place than to change. That is the single biggest determining factor in whether someone lives or dies, stays healthy or sick. In fact, I was up all night writing. I wrote what's going to be my next lecture at the retreat coming up in October. It'll be one of those really important, like life energy and the five harmony, all these different lectures I've done. This is going to be one of them because we've all been on the wrong path when it comes to helping people. Anyhow, if you want to be helped, you've got to realize you're going to have to go through some discomfort. You cannot stay in your comfort zone and survive. Look at all the people in Oregon. How tragic, how sad. Everyone who has a heart hates to see people lose everything. Five towns burned out and another 10 towns right on schedule to burn out too. Largest fire now in California history, Washington State. But Gary, it rains in Washington and in Oregon. In part of the state, it does. The other part is extremely dry. I just got a call from my producer who's driving upstate today, and he said, my goodness, for the last 100 miles, all I see is bone dry. And he's in an area where he grew up, his family grew up, and he said, all the creeks, all the ponds, everything is just dry. Yeah, that's the new norm. So the question is, would you move if you knew that you couldn't protect you or yourself or your possessions or home, family, from a fire or an earthquake or a hurricane? And the answer is, of course you would not. Absolutely, positively bet your life on it. You'll hear my comments on this in a few minutes. Take issue with them if you will. Be in my shoes and you'll see a different reality. So just remember, if you're not willing to change, there's not going to be a good outcome for you. If you are, you can certainly improve that outcome. But do you have a support system to help? Do you have friends or family willing to help be there when you make that change, to get out of your comfort zone, when you don't have answers and everything looks overwhelming and you feel just, I can't do this? And then you go into angst, anxiety, and withdrawal back in. Something to think about. From University of Arizona, green light therapy is shown to reduce migraine frequency and intensity. This is brand new information from the University of Arizona Health Sciences Department. And there's about nearly 40 million people in the United States and 1 billion people worldwide that suffer regularly from migraines. So what they're saying here is that they're using green light therapy as one of the ways of helping to impact this neurological condition. Overall, green light exposure reduces the number of headaches days per month by about 60%. Major study, participants, 86% of episodic migraine patients and 63% of chronic migraine patients reported a more than 50% reduction in headache days per month. That's a big difference. So, green light therapy. That's important. It's like blue light therapy. It's like a sauna, an infrared sauna, or even infrared saunas now have green light and blue light and yellow light, or a therapeutic. You know, they pulse. So it's not that difficult to get green light therapy. It doesn't take long, and it's painless. Curcumin, which is the active ingredient in turmeric. And by the way, some people seem confused by this. Let me try to make sense of this. An awful lot of the products on the market, or when you go into a store, are turmeric powder. But curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric, is only about 2 to 3%. You would have to consume an enormous amount of turmeric to get the biological valued curcumin. Best just to get the curcumin by itself. Anyhow, from Southern Taiwan University of Science and Technology, they found that curcumin is very important in helping to break that pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease. In a cell study, they found this. So if you know anyone who has dementia or Alzheimer's, curcumin can help. And from the University of Sao Paulo and Campinas in Brazil, researchers isolated 8 novel polyphenols from the rarest type of propolis. 2 of them were found to inhibit tumor cell proliferation in laboratory tests. And these were identified as red propolis. Now, you know that propolis is in the beehive. And it's what the bees use to sterilize their own hives. But long ago, beekeepers found that propolis was an extremely powerful natural antibiotic. And it didn't have harmful effects. Now, the average American doesn't have a little jar of propolis. And propolis was very, very hard to take. It tastes like oil out of your engine. And there's different types. But but all propolis is good. And the Brazilian red propolis, it comes from the coast and mangroves in the northeast region of that country, and it contains 2 very strong anti-cancer properties. So what better way to help protect against ovarian, breast, and brain cancer cells, which this did, than to have a little bit of bee propolis on a weekly basis? This was published in the Journal of Natural Products. And finally, aerobic exercise is the key to lowering your risk of dementia among the elderly. University of Texas Southwestern. The more you exercise, the more aerobic you are, you can stall brain deterioration and reduce plaques in the brain linked to Alzheimer's disease. Good news. And this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. That's the latest on health and healing. And oh yeah, University of Paris, the Mediterranean diet does, in fact, protect against rheumatoid arthritis. And this was published in Arthritis and Rheumatology. And also from the City of Hope in California, a study found botanical effective for chemo-resistant colon cancer. It's a botanical. It's called Andrographis, A-N-D-R-O-G-R-A-P-H-I-S, Panaculta, P-A-N-I-C-U-L-A-T-A. Just another piece of the puzzle, especially for colorectal cancer. And it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Carcinogenesis. So, something natural, non-toxic. It's taken with chemotherapy, but it enhances the chemotherapy. Oh, and by the way, you're going to see a whole new type of vitamin D coming up shortly. 25-hydroxy vitamin D. Yeah. And it is a great predictor of lessening premature death. University Hospitals, Louvain in Belgium. The latest from around the world. Now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to share a special commentary that is part 2, but more in-depth and more philosophical than part 1 that I shared yesterday. Yesterday was more about the numbers, just to show you what had happened in the last 10 days and how bad it is. And nothing is being done to prevent it, and nothing is being done to change the way that we live, where we live, how we think about being in non-sustainable environments. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the stations that syndicate this program. We're greatly appreciative of you being able to share our messages with your audiences. Just 3 quick program announcements. One is that many of you in this audience know that one more week and I'll no longer be on WBAI after 44, going on 45 years. The program director asked that I not discuss what I was going to discuss, which is positive ways of helping the station. So it's called a gag order, and that's fine. So I won't be discussing over the next week the positive things that could help the station. And evidently they have some censorship on free speech, and that's fine. Not a problem. But if you want to continue hearing this program, you can listen live each day over the Progressive Radio Network. Let me give you that number. Write it down now, because a week from today, that'll be my last program. The number is 774-337-6068. 774-337-6068. And if you want to listen to the archives, if you miss a show, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And of course, I only wish WBAI all the best in the future in all that it does. Now, the second announcement is that we will be doing our final retreat. Everything has been repurposed last 2 weeks of October, and we are purchasing premiums from BAI, for BAI, I should say, so that you'll get your premium, and that is important. And so those are the, and our anti-aging study, right now it's full, the two-week one, but there may be someone giving up a seat for some reason, in which case I'll announce it. Now we're going to go to a requiem to the new American. For the majority of people, we only fully understand the correctness or rightness of our choices after we reach our ultimate destination or the end of an effort. One day we work very hard, diligently, focused, or we arrive at a place and we think, this is where I've been trying to get to. Now, take a moment, turn around and ask yourself, is this where you intended to get? Is this what you want? How does this help you? What did you sacrifice? What choices did you make that were correct or incorrect? This is an introspective personal journey. You alone have to take this. And it's by understanding, did we make the right choices to get to the right place for the right reasons, that we can say, I'm enjoying a quality of life and ease of living. I'm not impacted by stress the way I otherwise would have been. And I'm happy where I'm at. Let me spend a little time here, collect my thoughts, and continue my journey through this life of growing and becoming more aware and able to share and care and nurture for those who are less capable or have less of what they need than myself. And that's where we can have that moment to say, you know something, I've got enough. What can I do to help the people in Yemen or the hungry children in America or the people living in Mississippi and Alabama and who are living right across the street from polluting chemical factories? They have no power. The legislatures are bought and captured. And they're suffering with bad water, bad air, bad health conditions, and they're forgotten. Now, that's in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama and West Virginia. So if I have achieved enough in my own life, why can't I share some of my time and energy to help others? Isn't that part of the goal of life, in a constructive way to help other people? I believe it is. But right now, most of our choices concern how we can avoid infection from the coronavirus or what the pandemic has done to create angst and the high level of suicidality and interpersonal quarrels and fighting, and especially where children are witness to this toxic energy. Think of all the conflict. Think of the escalation and the use of opiates, because people have not been conditioned to deal with the tough parts of life as our parents, the greatest generation, and their parents could. They dealt with privations that are unimaginable today during the Great Depression and then the Second World War. But we've lost that toughness. We are a nation, not all by any means, but especially the younger generation, and especially those who come from more affluent families, who are offended by everything. Their whole life is based upon yelling and screaming and being offended by something. But stop and ask, are you offended by global warming? Are you offended by hunger? Are you offended by women being exploited in third world countries so that an athlete can get multi-million-dollar checks from Nike but have virtue shaming out of one side of the mouth and total silence against the person that gave him the check and how women were abused on the other side. Do you see the contradiction? Do you see the hypocrisy? Do you see how politicians will say anything to get a political agenda? Does that offend you? More often than not, the answer is no. It's a no concern. Behind the pandemic is angst over who will lead the country, as if the less of two evils can be considered a viable option for a progressive and healthy future. In the meantime, we are inundated with the contentious debate of systemic racism and the media's delusional attention to the woke generation's Bible white fragility. They have not challenged it. They have not brought on those like Chris Hedges, for example, or other scholars who could show that white, the idea of white, all whites being a part of this white fragility new Bible, are born with inherent ethnic sin. They are racist from birth. All, no exceptions. Every person who's ever lived who was Caucasian. Now, if you think that's insane and absurd and can lead people to racist views, you are right. You would know that by the mainstream media. So who's really, in the meantime, we do nothing about what is really important each day in our lives. Nothing at all. We are told to hate one another. Oh my God, are we in this perpetual dynamic of hate everybody who is not exactly like you? You know, be anti-fascist by being hyper-fascist. Be anti-racist by being hyper-racist. My God, that's like Janet Reno saying to Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, I'm going to save the children, but first I have to kill them. Burn down the Branch Davidian. What's the mindset here? Have we regressed into some reptilian way of thinking? Yes, we have. And the media supports it. And this is where we're at. We're told we are all in this together. And that these crises and social political ills will be won together. No, they won't. Our government and federal agencies such as the EPA, the USDA, the FDA, the CDC, sing lullabies to comfort and assure us that they hold our best interests and well-being at heart. But the elite and political bureaucrats, both left and right, are already comfortably ensconced in incomes beyond their spending capacity, with entitlements that none of us will ever receive. And we are therefore expected to defer to them as the best and brightest on all issues, a privileged intelligentsia absent any wisdom, who are capable of making our decisions for us. Everything in life is under their control. But in truth, those among us who are unable to identify themselves among this global elite have no life raft in a sea of great white predatory sharks. Our once valued freedoms are controlled by Citizens United, the Patriot Act, and the National Defense Authorization Act, and in sundry mercurial agencies such as Homeland Security, the National Security Agency, and the CIA and Justice Department. Nor is there a resilient and popular third political option. Yes, we have a Green Party, but with less than 1% of the people voting for it, it is not effective. And you can't use that to leverage against a national discourse that ultimately favors private interest always and profits over people. What is missing from this discourse and popular narratives today is that which will eventually determine our future. From the Ethiopian peasant farmer who is starving to oligarchs in the Hamptons and Silicon Valley who have billions of dollars, they will never be questioned of how they made their money. And yet they will virtue shame other people for not being expedient as they fly on their private jets and have their fifth, sixth, and seventh mega home, mega yachts, mega cars. And yet no one says, how can you be for a sustainable environment and future when everything you do is contributing far more than whole peoples in other places around the world? There is no irony. Our futures will be victimized by a single issue that is being swept under the rug, and that is global warming. In fact, at this moment, the fundamental causes of anthropogenic activity fueling the devastating reports of wildfires, and you notice that not a single station told you that there is over 70 million acres burning in the boreal forest of Russia and Greenland and the Arctic, all over the world. Massive, massive fires. They only told you about how bad it is in California. And, oh, yeah, it's connected possibly with global warming. But they didn't tell you what to do. They didn't suggest that people shouldn't be living in California, and they shouldn't, or Oregon, and they shouldn't, or Washington State, and they shouldn't. But you and I both know they're not going to move. They've had many opportunities to move, nor will anyone move anywhere. That's the way it is now, and we know it. So, at this moment, the fundamental causes of most of our problems are a lack of engagement. And this reveals everything that is being ignored, as if there was no responsibility and no lessons to be learned from any crisis. It tells you something about the body politic of a Democrat and a liberal when they think that somehow the problem is the other, that their person is the right person, that Trump is the right person. He's not. Biden's the right person. He's not. Mike Pence is the right backup person. He is certainly not. Kamala Harris is the right backup person. She is not. And nobody seems to pay attention to this. And by the way, in California right now, an hour before this program, in Death Valley, they were breaking their previous record of 3 weeks ago of 130 degrees Fahrenheit. Over 3 million acres are now, or approximately 4,500 square miles, been lost along with 6,000 buildings. And the state is only midway into its fire season. Smoke plumes have gone up 50,000 feet, about 10 miles, and they're rising outside of Fresno. Five Oregon towns are completely 100% destroyed. And other fires rage in Washington and outside of Vancouver. The Midwest had its first, what is called Derecho. That's D-E-R-E-C-H-O. That's a very fast-moving, long-lived windstorm, which carries the potential to rival the force of hurricanes and tornadoes. Did you hear about it? Just happened. Do you know how much land was destroyed in homes? 10 million acres were destroyed in hours right across the heartland of America. Not a word in the media. Consequently, this year's crop and grain yields may reach record lows. As water demands far exceed its availability, U.S. agriculture is on the verge of collapsing. Elsewhere, there are 63,000 fires underway in Brazil, and fires in Siberia covered a region the size of Greece. Recently, we were informed that global ice melts have reached unprecedented speed. In just 30 years, 30 trillion, with a T, tons of the Earth's ice have been lost. Greenland's ice fields, that is terrible, according to Reuters, has declined beyond recovery. Russia's permafrost, now they have over 6,000 craters, as deep as over 30 meters, which is little less than 100 feet deep, frequently 100 feet wide. They look like they were human-made, but they're not. They're gigantic holes in the ground made from permafrost, melting, massive amounts of methane coming up out of it. That's just going to increase tremendously global warming. 60% of Antarctica's ice shelves are fractured. In other words, the ice sheet calving is accelerating and will subsequently increase sea level rise sooner now. I mean, right now that's happening. So if you live in any of the most wildfire-prone states, California, Nevada, Oregon, Oklahoma, Idaho, Texas, Colorado, there's a high probability that within the next 2 years, the quality of your life will change dramatically. If you happen to live along the Gulf in the southern Atlantic coastline, you'll witness Category 4 and 5 hurricanes, perhaps the first of a Category 6 superstorm. We can anticipate entire local economies collapsing as residents are forced to flee to other locations. To make matters worse, Oregon, Washington, and California, Nevada, and Idaho are on the fastest track to reach zero water. Yeah, now. Not 5 years, not 10 years, right now. Therefore, we are in the era of the greatest environmental destruction in human history. Three of the most populous nations, China, India, and the United States, are also the world's leading polluters. Together, these three nations account for 2/5 of the global population. Despite all the talk in international climate conferences, virtually nothing is being done to reduce greenhouse gas emission rates, nor to rapidly mobilize strategies to transition towards renewable economic and technological alternatives. There continues to be a catastrophic failure in our leadership to even begin to comprehend that our current neoliberal economic system, our current vulture capitalist system, with its constant need for capital and growth, more development in larger cities, that our collective actions and policies are placing our ecological systems and the planet into permanent hospice care. In conclusion, as our nations dither to the toxics in the toxic sludge of political correctness, the Arctic Circle and Antarctic melt, Siberia's boreal forests and Greenland's burn, the Amazon and Pacific coastal states are in flames. In several more months, Australia will enter its fire season. Last year it was the worst in their history. This year it'll be worse. There are massive migrations occurring in Africa and the Middle East. Everywhere, ecological systems are becoming more fragile as environmentally friendly lands for agriculture are depleted for natural resources in the process. It's long overdue that we ask hard questions. Do we as a species really care? At this moment, I will say unequivocally, loud and strong-minded, no, we do not care. Do we really care to beat the increasing epidemics of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and childhood obesity? Absolutely not. We're doing everything we can to get sicker. And all the statistics prove it. Instead of changing our dietary habits, our lifestyles to protect the environment, ourselves, we seemingly prefer to maim and kill ourselves with our forks and knives and bad behavior and internets and reality shows. Do we care enough to change our utterly contempt and corrupt dualistic political systems at the federal, state, and local levels? Hell no. Do we turn off and cancel our biased mainstream media, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, The New York Times, NPR, and so many others? Clearly the answer is no. Do we really care about the quality of children's education despite the younger generations being functionally illiterate? Obviously no, because all of our leading institutions are equally illiterate and greedy. So when we glance over the state of the sorry condition of human nature today, we should not be surprised that there is runaway climate change, decaying environment, bankruptcies galore, no financial stability, but a great divide between have and have-nots and income inequality. Our alienation within the carnival of our own mental funhouse is unable to hear Gaia's warning about drilling, extracting, mining, polluting her organs. Rather than reflect deeply on the consequences of our actions, we contemptuously flip the natural world the finger and say, I don't give a damn about you or anybody else. I'm in the new American, self-absorbed, narcissistic, indifferent, and clueless. We only care about ourselves, so go screw yourself, end quote. Yet for that small, vital, caring, nurturing, and spiritually aligned group of Americans, which is about 15 million, who do care and are making conscientious personal and small group changes in their lives, trying to help bring back some of the fiber that held a society and a family and individuals together that gave purpose and meaning, manners and morals, ethics, and an understanding of cause and effect. It's all on them. They are the canaries in the coal mine. No matter how many share their truths with the larger public has canceled them, because the rest of America, from its politicians to its corporations to its media to the average citizen, you carry a truth that they refuse to hear. They see it all as pointless in their own lives. At the end of the day, the only cries we will hear are those who will say, why me? Why that just happened? Why my house burned down? Why today? And we can respond, why not? You choose to disregard your imagination and the gifts of critical thought and to consider the consequences of the choices you have made? Do you understand that what brought you to this karmic moment is what choices you made wrong, and refuse to understand that the universe gave you an option to learn and change, and you said no? And yet, in 200 cities, more or less, people are having dinner and now they're being accosted. Their meal not just disrupted, them denigrated. How do you think that's going to change hearts and minds? How do you think that people will say, thank you for berating me and hurling racial epithets against me, demeaning me? Thank you for assaulting me and insulting me, or violently striking me, tipping my table over. Thank you, I needed that. No, that's not the way we change. And yet that is the new mantra. Therefore, we are reaping what we have sowed. Those are my thoughts. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to share some other thoughts with you from Chris Hedges and Jonathan Whitehead. Please stay with us.
There's something I can give in exchange for everything you give to me. Read my mind, you make me feel just fine when I think my peace of mind is out of reach.
I'd like to welcome you back. I'm Gary Nall. In the last part of our program today, I want to share some additional views, and these are from Chris Hedges. The title of his post on SharePost is American Bloodlands. It's a long piece, and typical for Chris, it takes you to a level of thinking where it's like holding a mirror in front of you, but not allowing you to turn away and not allowing you to Photoshop it. It is meant to be uncomfortable. There are times in life where we have to go through some humiliation or embarrassment to realize, stop playing the games of denialism. Quote, the tinder that could soon ignite widespread violent conflagrations throughout the United States lies ominously stacked around us. Millions of disenfranchised white Americans who see no way out of their economic and social misery, struggling with an emotional void, are seething with rage against a corrupt ruling class and bankrupt liberal elite that presides over political stagnation and grotesque mounting social inequality. Millions more alienated young men and women, also locked out of the economy and with no realistic prospect for advancement or integration, gripped by the same emotional void, have harnessed their fury in the name of tearing down the governing structures and in the name of anti-fascism. The enraged, polarized segments of the population are rapidly consolidating as the political center disintegrates. They stand poised to tear apart the United States, awash in military-grade weapons, unable to cope with the crisis of COVID-19 pandemic and its economic fallout. curse with militarized police forces that function as internal armies of occupation and de facto allies of the neo-fascist. Then I'll skip down. It says, this is what's the most important part for me is this, quote, "Violence is a narcotic. It fills the emotional void. It imparts a feeling of godlike omnipotence to the powerless. It instills feelings of comradeship and belonging to the alienated. It gives to social outcasts crippled by humiliation and rejection a sense of meaning and higher purpose. It obliterates the desire that once defined their lives and replaces with feelings of ecstatic self-importance and self-adulation, a state of being outside the self. The world suddenly becomes a Manchurian battleground between them and us, the forces of dark and the forces of light." The words left and right, once violence becomes the primary form of communications, are meaningless. These are death cults. They venerate and worship death. The martyrs justify the murder of the enemy, including the detested voices that call for understanding, reconciliation, and nonviolence. To suggest anything other than the total annihilation of the enemy, and the enemy includes all who do not fully and uncritically support the cause. It is the dead who rule. Their voices cry out from beyond the grave, demanding vengeance and new heroes and martyrs to take their place. There are constant and repeated acts of remembrance for the fallen. This cult of the dead is integral to combat units in the military. Those who attend the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program, an 8-week course held at Fort Benning Jr. to become an Army Ranger, must select a Ranger in the sky who was killed in action. Recruits who are warned not to pick Pat Tillman as required to know the details of the dead Ranger's personal life. By the way, as an aside, he was killed by his own soldiers. But as deaths accumulate, these martyrs, once so important and precious, disappear into faceless, nameless piles of corpses. The Nazi Party in 1930 found its primary martyr in the 19-year-old brown shirt Horst Wiesel, who led a branch of the Nazi paramilitaries that attacked communists, especially those who made up the rival communist militia, the Red Front Fighters League. Wiesel was shot dead by Albrecht Ali Holler, a communist militant and petty criminal, later assassinated by the Nazis. After a complaint was made to the party about Wiesel by his communist landlady, Wiesel instantly became a martyr for the Third Reich. The Horst Wiesel song became the official anthem of the Nazi Party. Fascist and communist violence, with deaths on both sides, exploded in the streets of Weimar Germany in the early 1930s. Martyrdom also played a central role in the eruption of the war in the former Yugoslavia. On March 1, 1992, a wedding procession of Bosnian Serbs in Sarajevo was attacked by Ramis Deledic, a career criminal and a Muslim known for his nickname, Selo. The father of the groom was killed. A Serbian Orthodox priest was wounded. The shooting of Gardovic, like that of Wiesel, was used by Serb nationalists to whip up a blood fury. It saw Serbs erect armed barricades and roadblocks throughout the city that led not long afterwards to a war in which most of the Bosnia was destroyed. 2.2 million people were displaced from their homes. At least 100,000 died. I watched many funerals in Gaza for Palestinian martyrs. They were little more than recruiting ceremonies for militants and suicide bombers. A truck with a generator in the back and huge loudspeakers on the cab would be at the head of the funeral procession. The speakers would blast out verses from the Quran, along with slogans calling on heroes to fight and die for Palestine and become a shaheed or a martyr. Young boys would run alongside or behind the truck. the funeral processions made their way very slowly down the dusty, narrow streets of the refugee camps, past the concrete hovels, the walls decorated with pictures of the newest martyr, or murals that depicted past attacks, such as the bus with the Israeli Star of David on it being consumed in a fire explosion. "Don't be merciful to those inside," the Arabic script read below the picture of the bus. "Blow it up, hit it. It is the first death which infects everyone with a feeling of being threatened," wrote Elias Kentele, a Bulgarian refugee from Nazi persecution, in Crowds in Power. "It is impossible to overrate the part played by the first dead man in the kindling of wars. Rulers who want to unleash war know very well that they must procure or invent a first victim. It need not be anyone of particular importance and can even be someone quite unknown. Nothing matters except his death, and it must be believed that the enemy is responsible for this. Every possible cause of his death is suppressed except one, his membership of the group to which one belongs oneself." The flashing of red lights are all around us. Joe Biden and the Democratic Party will do little to restore the social bonds or address the social inequality and disenfranchisement of tens of millions of Americans now facing eviction and bankruptcy, which is fueling the social collapse. Donald Trump and the Republican Party, along with media outlets such as Fox News, in a bid to retain power, are fanning the flames of violence, seeing in the incitement of far-right mobs a route to a ruthless police state. In armed conflicts, facts and truth no longer matter. Lies become, if used to further the cause, righteous. Truth, if it hurts the cause, is blasphemy. If your side commits an atrocity, it's justified by an atrocity, real or invented, carried out by the enemy. The ends always justify the means. The moral universe is banished, replaced by a self-serving pseudo-morality. "In the beginning, war looks and feels like love," I wrote, "and war is a force that gives us meaning. But unlike love, it gives nothing in return but an ever-deepening dependence, like all narcotics, on the road to self-destruction." End quote, Chris Hedges. By the way, for those who would like to join us for what will be the final retreat to get your life health together, and I'll be spending a lot of the time there, all brand new lectures, but a lot looking at the world we live in today and asking a basic question: what do we need to do to find the right places with the right groups, right sustainable communities, if we no longer feel safe or sustained in our immediate environment or with our health or choices? You can call Lou Ann Panessi. She's the one who does the interviewing, 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. I look forward to being back right here. And for our BAI listeners, please write down the number, because after next week at this time, you won't hear me any longer after 44 and almost 45 years, 774-337-6068. Have a nice day, everyone.